coming up on today's program.
Allowing the stereotypes to dictate what it is that we enjoy doing can also impact our mental health.
Finding the company we keep, candid conversations, and other stories. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. And our first look at finding community takes place in the final episode of the season of We Outside. Creator and host Trey Elzey goes bird watching and finds more than birds. She finds that community.
Birding is a quiet activity, but when you're out there, it's anything but silent. Birds call, leaves rustle, and sometimes laughter and community fill the air too. For me, nature has always been a healing space, but I haven't always seen myself fully represented there. That's why this moment, this walk, mattered. Here's the founder of Everybody Birding, Lindsay Slack, saying why she started up this group.
I wanted to create a welcoming space where anyone and everyone could come together and enjoy birds.
That starts with the basics, making people feel welcomed and supported.
The BIPOC community, LGBTQIA plus community, also considering, you know, people who are blind, people who are deaf, all of those things. Plus, being a brown person who loves the outdoors, I love to camp, I love to go to birding activities, and a lot of times I am the only brown person there or one of very few brown people there.
Nyla Mannion is a first-time birder who appreciated this.
I do not know a lot about birds, and I mean, I've learned a lot just in the few minutes that I've been here. Whenever I do go out to a park and it's not with this group, I'm not really seeing as many people who look like me. And sometimes I might see someone who has binoculars and, like, you know, it wasn't like a, here's a list of things to buy or here's a list of things to bring. It was like, bring yourself.
For longtime outdoorsman Willie Franklin, this wasn't just another bird outing. It was part of a personal mission, one rooted in joy, history, and responsibility.
Everybody Birding Club is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it basically encourages people to get outside and explore. Doesn't matter if you're a novice, doesn't matter if you're a birding pro with many years of experience, just come out, enjoy it. Every time I see a person of color outside enjoying the great outdoors and feeding their soul via nature, it's almost an intoxicating joy that I try to manage so my face doesn't explode, because we were instructed, oh, black folks don't do that. So now, in my adulthood, I feel just charged, responsible to change that narrative, to get out and be my true self and encourage others to do the same.
There's medicine in the trees, in the bird song, and in the walking. And that truth shows up in every corner of this community. Kristen Johnson, a holistic physician, reflected on this.
I'm a lifestyle medicine doc, and so it's really important to me, to, as nature as medicine, to be outside. And often I'm not necessarily welcomed in a lot of spaces, or I feel uncomfortable in some spaces where certain comments have been made about me not being a normal person of color because I like being outside. Allowing the stereotypes to dictate what it is that we enjoy doing can also impact our mental health.
Lindsay Slack told us about her spark bird, the bird that first got her hooked.
My spark bird was the tufted titmouse. And every time I see it at my bird feeders, like, my heart melts a little bit. I'm like, oh, yeah. Hey, there you are. Like, it's my personal bird.
Mine is the American robin. They always seem to find me, hopping towards me on sidewalks, showing up right when I need a reminder to stay grounded. Today's outing felt so supportive. I knew that this was a space for all of us.
I would hope that in the future, someone can just put something up on one of the social media platforms and say, hey, I'm going to go birding here tomorrow, and hopefully people will show up.
Check out Everybody Birding's Facebook page for upcoming events. For WISO, I'm Trey Elzey, and we outside.
Trey Elzey is a graduate of WISO's Community Voices Training Program. We Outside is supported by Five Rivers Metro Parks. Today, we also bring you a new episode of Translucent, a series by Antioch College student and WISO intern Lee Wade that explores the issues shaping trans lives.
Hi, I'm Lee Wade, and you're listening to Translucent, a series that amplifies trans voices, humanizes our community, and creates space for the real everyday conversations that don't make headlines. Bobby Brooke Arnold is a trans woman, community activist, and 2024 candidate for the Ohio House of Representatives. She's built a name for herself by showing up, speaking out, and advocating for LGBTQ plus rights in her community and beyond. Back in May, she spoke at a trans rights rally here in Ohio, calling for unity and urging people to take action.
The last few years, we've been fighting nonstop here in Ohio for trans rights. Our state legislature has been battling us for restrooms, access to medical care in our schools, and we've had enough. And things are serious right now. So we need all of our people. We need to show up, we need to be visible, and we need to be here, heard. And let them know that we will not be erased. We will not hide. We're not going to run from them. And we will prevail.
Bobby is now the Director of Advocacy and Transgender Outreach for PFLAG Dayton, an organization that works to educate allies, support families, and advocate for equitable and inclusive legislation and policies. Bobby says making sure that people are educated about the trans community has been a critical part of her journey.
I was born in West Alexandria, Ohio, which is just to the west of Dayton, about 30 minutes. My small town roots, to me, is every bit a part of what makes me who I am as my gender identity is. So for me to shrink myself down is not an option. And for me to leave my home is not an option. And so from day one, when I first came out, I've always looked at it as, if I want those around me to understand who I am, what makes me who I am, that I have to be the one to educate them.
In 2024, Bobby ran for the Ohio House of Representatives, challenging Rodney Creech, a Republican who is currently serving his third term in Ohio House of Representatives, representing the 40th District, which includes their hometown.
I've known Rodney Creech my whole life. He was actually one of the first people who reached out to me after I came out as trans, and he asked questions and wanted to understand more. And he won the 2020 election, and that's when he became a state legislator. After that, every time that there was an anti-trans bill that came across his desk, I made sure to call out to him and have a conversation with him and educate him on what it is that bill was about, what it was targeting. He was affirming and accepting in those conversations. Every conversation that we had, he would agree with me, but he would always vote against us. And so once he, you know, was really starting to lean into some of the anti-trans views as I was pushing back, he really leaned into it. And that's where I became more engaged with him directly, which is what ended up leading to the previous person who ran and asked me if I would run against him. And so, of course, I did. Somebody needs to challenge them. If they're going to be running on these platforms and they're going to be using this rhetoric against us, then we need to be challenging them directly.
Rodney Creech won the election, but even though Bobby didn't win, her campaign played a key role in raising awareness in Ohio about LGBTQ plus issues and the need for better representation, especially for the transgender community.
There's an incredible opportunity, especially in these red districts, where there are so many people who are misinformed. So I see this as a critical space where we have the opportunity to address that misinformation and correct that in some of the deepest red parts of Ohio.
I'm Lee Wade, and thank you for listening to Translucent.
Translucent is made possible by support from the Ruby Girls Foundation and is produced along with We Outside at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. This is WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for sharing your weekend with WISO. And we've got some idea of how you can spend time this upcoming weekend or next weekend. And we've got WISO Music Director Juliet Frumholt to tell us all about it.
Hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So next Friday, August 1st, is WISO's annual Listener Appreciation Concert. We will be once again at Levitt Pavilion in downtown Dayton for a great night of free and open to the community music on the lawn in the heart of downtown Dayton.
That's such a great venue.
I love it. We are so grateful to partner with Levitt Pavilion Dayton. They're always bringing really interesting artists, some that we know and love, some that we're discovering for the first time. And the fact that anyone in the community can come and participate and partake of that music is just really something special to have in our community.
Yeah. I can't believe it's been a year already, but it's great. Nice place to chill, sit back and relax and listen to some great music. So what is on hand for listeners this year?
Yeah, this year is a celebration of Ohio hip hop. Blueprint is going to be headlining. He is a rapper and producer out of Columbus, very well known and loved in the underground hip hop scene. He's on Rhymesayers. He's worked with RJD2. He is also an author and a mentor to a lot of emerging hip hop artists. He really cares not only about the artistry of music, but about really making sure that independent artists have what they need to thrive in a really competitive space. He'll be joined on stage by Dayton's own Safe Money. That is the duo of Kay Carter and Tino, who are both great MCs on their own. They combine their forces as Safe Money. They released their second album last summer called Safe Money 2. It has a great song on it called First in Funk, celebrating Dayton's funk legacy. Those guys are so much fun on stage. We've had them individually at a couple of WISO events, but this is our first time really presenting them together.
I bet there might be one or two listeners out there who would say, what is WISO doing featuring hip hop? But we've got a Tuesday night hip hop music program.
We do, yeah. Tables of Content has been on the air since 2016,
wow.
I believe. Yeah, don't quote me on that. 3J,
sure.
Double check me. Celebrating, golden and classic era hip hop. But I will also say that we have been very intentional over the past 5 or so years to really acknowledge that hip hop is a very important part of American music in general. It's a genre that celebrated its 50th anniversary just a couple of years ago. And so we've been trying to incorporate more hip hop into our regular mix on Midday Music, on Kaleidoscope, on Nova Phonic. And really, it's a testament to the fact that Dayton's hip hop scene is thriving right now. That's one of the reasons why we're so interested in highlighting this genre, is there's so much of it happening right here, right now. Really special, really multi-generational. Tino and Kay Carter as Safe Money are part of that scene. Blueprint being our neighbor in Columbus, certainly adjacent to that as well.
Great. What else do we have in the way of listener appreciation?
Well, come and enjoy with us. We will be there. A lot of our hosts will be there. So please meet us, talk to us. We'll have some swag, as always, some goodies branded WISO and Nova Phonic. So please come out. This night of music is just a small way that we can say thank you to you for being a part of our music community.
So you guys are actually hip-hopping in the music department from event to event.
That's
what
true.
Else do we have on hand coming up?
Coming up, we have a lot of things. August is a very busy month for our team. Just a couple of places that you can see us, and you can always follow us on social media for more. On August 10th, which is a Sunday, we'll be in Kettering for Art at the Commons. We love curating the stage there. We'll be joined by 5 local acts who we absolutely love. They will be familiar to our listeners. Really excited to share them. We have another Tiny Stacks concert coming up on the 21st. And a couple of our staff will be DJing around town at a couple of events, a couple of those sort of community-sourced fundraisers for the station right now. And you can follow us on Instagram at novaphonic.fm to learn more about that.
Awesome. So, Juliet, let's wrap up with some music that people might get to hear next Friday.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up with Safe Money, First in Funk. Thank you so much, Sherry.
All right. Check it out. Thanks, Juliet.
Funky. King Carter, Save Money. Hey, ladies. Yeah, safe money in the building, better lock your doors. We hit a sweep of the competition and mop the floors. What we got in store? Louis and Dior. Not twisting your leg, but that's what we make these figures for. But I need more. I'm talking somebody to miss while I'm on tour. While I'm in France, Toy Moon or more. Now all aboard. And I will never call you my beach baby unless we near the shore. With you is where I gladly be. We always ride with each other like passenger seats. It's like a dream. We don't know what's happening. Slow down when your pants unfastening. I got the money, are you with me or not? You got the honey, am I Winnie or not? The story of us buried together, girl, this is the plot. Let's make a movie, that's a COVID. Now give me a shot, I need a boost, yeah. I don't care about it. Let them talk about it. I don't care about it. Let them talk about it. I don't care about it. Let them talk about it. I don't care about it.
If it sound like this, then you know it's us. Like, got on a dollar and us you trust. Stay safe, get money, don't hurt nobody. Unless that body of yours needs hurting. But best me for certain, cause I don't do no flirting. I just put the work in and then slide like a serpent. So if that fruit forbidden, then you better keep it hidden. Or just like the beginning, it's gonna be an eve sinning. Worst way to spend a night, though, am I right? Of course I am, it's not a typo, you my type. Show me what buttons to push, baby. I know some keystrokes, body talking to me. The speech sound like a keynote, get with the program.
Again, we sure hope to see you Friday night at Levitt Pavilion for WYSO's Listener Appreciation Concert. I'm Jerry Kenny. You are listening to WYSO Weekend, and thanks so much for joining us. Well, up next, Ohio experienced a historic drought last year, escalated by higher temperatures and decreased rainfall. This summer, the state is seeing the opposite weather extreme. WYSO's Shea Frank sat down with the Ohio Department of Agriculture's director, Brian Baldridge, to discuss the impact of last year's drought on farmers and how this year Ohio farms are facing challenges from lasting rainfall.
So can you give us a quick rundown of what the drought conditions looked like last year, especially at this specific time last year?
The first part of all this, we were really doing a lot of discussions and starting to hear a lot from our southeast and southern part of the state, hearing directly from farmers that they were already starting to feed hay, which would normally, you know, that's their winter crop. So at this time last year, it was probably kind of the beginning where we really started taking a deep dive into what was going on.
Can you explain how having such a historic drought can alter farming in the state?
So there's a lot more pasture lands in southern and southeast Ohio. And those are the ones that were really impacted last year as they were kind of doing that first cutting hay, which is usually done in June. And then all of a sudden, the pastures dried up. The livestock did not have, you know, good pasture to eat. And then all of a sudden, they started feeding what they normally would start feeding in, let's say, November, October, November of a normal year. They started feeding their hay crop, you know, in August.
And then how long did it take for Ohio to leave that disaster level drought designation?
We really didn't see that removed until kind of over the winter months as we started getting some rainfalls. But we needed multiple rainfalls to actually build that water table back up, because not only was the pastures that were impacted, but it was those springs as well, those ponds that farmers, producers were using to water their livestock as well.
But what were the long-term impacts then for these Ohio farmers that experienced this, you know, historic drought?
We did hear from producers that they did sell some of their livestock just because they did not have the feed there. There's a window of catch-up time there as we've seen a decrease. And we know across the country, cattle numbers are down already from herd size numbers. So this was an impact that was concerning to us when we heard farmers that were, you know, kind of, we used the term calling, which means selling that cow, those cows and their herd, maybe not all of them, but just, you know, cutting back because they were having challenges with water and also feed.
So how has this increased rainfall impacted our water table here in Ohio?
It seemed like just about the time the soil conditions were right to be in those fields with planters, we were getting another rainfall. And then you know, if you do plant that crop and all of a sudden you get a big downpour, well, now you have stand issues, which means basically some of those plants, some of those seeds did not germinate, did not come up because there were excessive water in those areas. And usually it's isolated areas and fields, but you go back in and you replant. I heard some farmers saying they had to replant because they got heavy rains right after each time they were planting. But overall, you know, our water table seems to be in a good spot.
It's interesting how the extremes of drought last year to now extreme rain can have negative impacts on farmers here in Ohio.
I will say overall, you know, if you got a good stand, meaning those plants came up and they were growing, you know, the rainfall and the heat that we're having now is really good for growing conditions. But the, you know, those challenges of getting that timely planting done, you know, hopefully we will see how, you know, if the fall season kind of goes a little later, it'll be very helpful to us because our crops will probably take just a little bit longer to mature, which will push us into a little bit later harvest.
If you wanted to kind of speak directly to our listeners, where else would you tell them that they can go to learn more about the drought or its impact on farmers?
The Ohio Department of Agriculture, you know, our website, we try to do a good job of putting information out there. You know, you can search U.S. drought monitor maps and search Ohio. You can kind of track that and also see what our neighboring states are doing. And the other thing we always want to mention, just resources, and that's mental health. You know, I heard it through the voices and saw it in their eyes of our farmers that dealt with really rough drought conditions last year. And, you know, I always tell folks, kind of keep an eye on your neighbor. Sometimes the ag community, we're pretty proud, and we don't want to talk about it if we're feeling a little down. But it's okay to talk about that.
Well, thanks again, as the director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture, Brian Baldridge, for giving us some more insight into drought conditions and their long-term impact on Ohio's farmers.
Thanks so much. Glad to talk with you.
Find more of Shay's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. In 2014, WYSO launched Youth Radio to give high school students the opportunity to speak for themselves. Each year, teens collaborate with the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices to write, produce, and share their own stories on WYSO. This season's host, Lee Wade, is back with this segment.
Hey there. You just tuned into WYSO Youth Radio. We're working with high schoolers across the area to share their stories through sound. This next generation turned all the way up. Here's Landon Keaton from Ponent Career Technology Center, who gets to talk with the author of his favorite book. How cool is that?
My favorite book is The Giver. It is about a boy named Jonas who lives in a so-called utopia where memories are erased. Jonas sees through this facade, and the book follows his journey to freedom where memories exist. The Giver is the perfect book. It has emotion, drama, thoughtfulness, relatability, and a message of individuality. I interviewed the author, Lois Lowry. Miss Lowry has won many awards, including the Newbery Award for The Giver. We talked about The Giver, the importance of books, and her childhood.
My father was a career Army officer. So I was born in Honolulu because that's where he was stationed at the time. My mother took her children, me and my older sister, back to the small town where she had grown up. So I grew up without my father. I learned to read before I began school, and reading became a very important part of my life, probably in part because my mother, who had been a teacher before she married, always read to us. And so literature became an important part of my life. And at first it was, you know, kiddie books, talking bunnies and all of that. But I was always allowed to read. There was no book censorship in my house. I was allowed to read any book that was in my house or any book in the public library. And so I branched out and I read books that were too old for me, but that didn't matter. Books remained, as they always had been, very important to me. Books were always there as an inviting alternative to real life.
What inspired you to write The Giver?
Writers are inspired by their imagination. However, you can usually pinpoint some little something that triggers an idea. I frequently visited my parents, who were getting old and lived in Virginia. My father's memory was disappearing, the way it does when you get old. He looked at a picture of his two little girls. He said, "There you are with your sister. I can't remember her name." And then he said, "Whatever happened to her?" And I realized he had forgotten my sister. She had died when she was young. And the death of their first child was something that was probably the worst thing that had ever happened to them. And yet he had forgotten it. And I started thinking, would it be a good thing if we would be able to simply forget everything that makes us sad or scared? And that became the idea for my book. And what do you hope to do?
I plan on attending Wright State.
Now I'm feeling jealous of you. I want to be 16 again and looking forward to doing all that stuff. I'm very interested in your school situation because, you know, in my day, school was a simpler place. You didn't have media training of any sort in a school that I went to. And I think you guys are so fortunate to have access to all that stuff. I'm just very interested in education and the forms that it takes. And I think you're in a good situation. Lucky you.
I'm grateful to have interviewed the author of my favorite book.
It was good to meet you, and I wish you well.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. Books open up imagination like nothing else can. I'm Landon Keaton, here on WYSO, and remember to keep on reading.
Thank you, Landon. And a big shout-out to Joanne Cassell. WYSO Youth Radio is made possible with the support from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. And it's produced right here at WYSO in the Eichenberger Center for Community Voices.
WYSO Youth Radio is where students from our community share their voices and stories. If you've missed an episode or even a past season, you can catch up anytime at WYSO.org.
This is Bird Note. Meet the secretary bird, a bird of prey like no other on Earth. Picture, if you can, a slim eagle striding through the grasslands of sub-Saharan Africa on tall, slender legs like those of a crane. Standing 4 feet tall, the secretary bird is beautiful, feathered in silver, set off by black wings and leggings. The face is half covered in bright red skin. Beyond the black tail extend two long white plumes tipped in black, and from the back of the head dangles a spray of long black feathers. Utterly fantastic in appearance, these specialized raptors are also serious carnivores. Secretary birds track down their prey not on the wing, but on foot, often walking more than 20 miles a day. They hunt rodents, snakes, insects, lizards, and other animals, dispatching them by stamping repeatedly with rapid, powerful kicks of their talons. Secretary, in the bird's name, might follow from its black head quills, reminiscent of 19th century human secretaries with black quill pens. But more probably, secretary derives from the Arabic word for hunter bird. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And that's a wrap for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for sharing your weekend with WYSO. We've got more stories coming for you next weekend. Please join us then.